get comics into schools and schools into comics. One of the things that I've noticed over the last 10 years is, you know, for a while, comics were not used in schools. With Comics Code and coming up through the years, comics were forgotten. And now, over the last 10 years, I've seen this huge resurgence in teachers and librarians and parents really seeing that comics can be used as educational tools, mostly in the area of reading and literacy. But what I'd like to do today is let's talk about pushing that to the next level. Let's talk about using comics to teach math and science and history and other subject areas of comic things. So, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to have you guys introduce yourselves so that I don't completely blow it. Exciting and fun panel full of people that make wonderful things for children and for students. And we want to start on the far end. Jonathan, you want to start?
Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming. My name is Jonathan Hennessy, and I'm the author of fiction and nonfiction, but what I've had published so far are all nonfiction standalone graphic novels. One's an adaptation of the whole U.S. Constitution. The other one is a book on the Civil War. It uses the words of the Gettysburg Address to tell the whole Civil War story. And then an upcoming book, the comic book History of Beer. And I have some fiction books that will hopefully percolate. One will be coming out in the fall.
You should. My name is Fred Van Lente. I write comics on a variety of subjects, including pertinent to this panel, philosophy and history and science. So we'll get specifically to that as we do the presentation.
Hi, I'm Josh Elder. I'm the founder of Reading with Pictures. I also write a number of comics in a number of places relevant and germane to this topic. I did comics on math and science in the our Reading with Pictures comics that make kids smarter. The sampler is right up there, and I encourage you all to take one. In fact, take several, because the bag I used to carry this box of them was fell apart. Like, it just disintegrated on the
flimsy
way here.
Flimsy bag. It
so
was very flimsy.
There's no going back for those. So please take them. Fred, Jeffrey, myself, we're all in there doing great stuff.
Hello, I'm Jeffrey Golden. I, too, wrote in the Reading with Pictures book. I've also written comics for Sesame Street. I also write stories for a series of video games called Namons, which you can find on the iPhone and iPad. They're educational video games that teach math. And in addition, I write stuff, in addition to writing things that make you smarter, I also write things that will make you a little dumber, like this, The Devastator, which is a series of comedy books, and you can find us on the exhibit floor, aisle 800, booth F3.
I'm Jason Batterson, late addition, hence the lack of a name panel. I write what, as far as I know, is the only attempt at a complete elementary math curriculum in comic book form. It's called Beast Academy, and I'll talk a little bit more about it when I have a chance. But it's a full curriculum, not yet complete, but we intend to make a curriculum from grade 2 through 5 completely in comic form.
Great. Thank you guys so much. So we can see we're going to cover math and science and history and social studies. Just to start, this is something we use at Reading Pictures. This is Josh's brainchild. Why are comics great teaching tools? We talk about the three E's of comics. Engaging. Comics are engaging not only because kids like them, because they're fun, but because the comics require readers to actively make meaning. They have to fill in the gaps between the panels. What happened between Lucy holding the football and Charlie Brown laying on his back? They have to fill that in their head. They have to work to make the text and the images work together to create an entire story. In a picture book, you have a picture of a dog and underneath it says this is a dog. You could read the pictures or the text separately. In a comic, we have to read them together. The text doesn't tell the whole story, the images don't tell the whole story, they have to do it together. The next E is efficient. Comics are efficient, and this is where it really works for the subject areas. You can get a lot of information across in a very short period of time with visual information. It doesn't take as long to read a page of comics as it does to read an entire page of text. And they're effective. There have been several studies that have shown that images and text together promote better recall and actually better transfer of learning than in text alone. Nick, welcome.
Hi,
you missed a few questions. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Nick Dragata. I created HowlToons.
educational kids comic that shows you how to build things. We celebrated our 10th anniversary in 2014 and put a collection of all our work since 2004. And then in August, we're launching a new miniseries with the talented Fred Van Lente and Tom Fowler. So all new content coming in August.
Okay, and I guess we want to hear from you guys. This is the most important part of the panel, so I'm going to save the rest of this up to the end. Why don't we start with math? Would you like to go first?
I'd be happy to go first. Sure okay. thing. I've made notes, and I couldn't find them in my bag just now, so, but I think I'll be fine.
Technical
difficulties. I just nod to you.
Here you are. Yeah, just yell and say no, and I'll go to the next.
All right, so that's the cover of our most recent book, Beast Academy Guide 4B. Myself and I should point out that my artist, Eric Owen, is here, and co-author Shannon is here as well. Shannon Rogers. So we create this curriculum together. Eric and I sit in a room and work on it for a company called Art of Problem Solving. Art of Problem Solving is sort of the mecca online for math nerds. We teach all of the smartest kids in the country from grades 6 through 12 or so. 11 of the 12 International Math Olympiad participants were from our company, or were taking classes for our company, or with our company. So we're the online mecca for math nerds. And the CEO called me 4 years ago and said, I need someone to broaden our reach downward. I need someone to write the curriculum for elementary school. And I said, that sounds like the most awesome job that I've ever heard of. And so I came out and we spent some time talking about how it should look. And we kept coming back to the comic book. We didn't initially know that we were going to write a comic book series, but it seemed like a great way to make kids smarter. And so there's three, I thought of three big things. I have different E's, I think. Engagement is certainly one of them. And go ahead and go to that one. So it's been very well received. You can see this is, we get lots and lots of emails from parents, but this is one of my favorites. A woman wrote in and said that she was monitoring the playground at her daughter's elementary school, and she saw a bunch of little girls hiding in the corner on this beautiful day in Michigan, and it was the only beautiful day they'd had in Michigan in months. And she went over to find out what sort of contraband they were playing with. And as she looked over, she saw that these girls were actually reading Beast Academy in this corner of the playground. My second favorite story is probably, I thought of this just a minute ago. There was a kid, we go to math counts every year, and we hand these books out frequently to Math Counts is a middle school competition. It's sort of like the Comic-Con for middle school math nerds. And a lot of those kids have little siblings. And we handed this one kid our Beast Academy book. And the next day, his dad came into the room with us. And he said, you know what? My son, I was concerned last night because he climbed out of bed and he went into the bathroom. And the light was on. And about 20 minutes later, I decided to check on him. And he went in, and in the bathroom was his son just sitting there trying to finish the Beast Academy guide that we had given him. They are fantastic for engaging kids. Kids pick up a comic book, and they just read it from cover to cover. And it's a math book. And I don't know how many math books you could find on the playground in the corner where the kids were sort of sneaking away to go read their comic book in the middle of a playground recess time. So the second big thing that we decided was important, and I should be faster, probably. There's a lot of people on this panel. But the second thing is that when we write a comic, I think this goes with the efficiency. We have four main kids, and you can see all four kids. They're not kids, they're monsters, but little monsters. Each monster has their own handwriting, and each monster has their own color. And the color of their handwriting matches the character. And what this does is it lets us really put a nice diagram on the page where every kid who's reading it can see exactly how that thing is built. Now, this is probably the third page. You can see the diagram that they built. Alex is blue, and he started off by explaining this tree diagram. And Lizzie built on that. Grog built on that. And at the bottom, they're sort of summarizing what happened. They're counting the number of ways that they can make a meal with the choices. So it's very nice to be able to, the efficiency is there. To be able to have a teacher in the front of the room who's, you know, a giant monster, ridiculous-looking teacher, pointing at stuff as she explains it is a lot more like having a teacher in the classroom than reading a wall of text. And let's go ahead and go to the next one. Probably the most important thing that we do in this book is that it's a conversation. In this book, we are able to model the conversations that we wish kids would have about math. Sometimes that means kids are getting stuff wrong. So you can see in the third panel there, or I guess I can't remember exactly which panel it is, but here they're on an island of truth tellers and liars. We have a logic chapter. And Grog says, I know how to figure out if they're a liar. We just ask them. He says, are you a liar? And of course, the other kids point out that there's some flaws in this logic. And so he goes, oh yeah, I guess we've got to figure out something else. And we are able to have a lot of the conversations that we wish kids would have. Making mistakes is all right, and it happens all the times in our comic. And we try to make the right mistakes so that the kids are... You know, kids make the same mistakes all the time, and we show them why they messed up there. Let's look at a couple more here, and I'll wrap up. We are able to model looking for patterns. We're able to look... here they're doing long division, but it doesn't look anything like long division. But if I ask you to divide 1793 by 32, and you've never seen the long division algorithm, this is sort of how you do it. You say, well, I know, well, if I had 50 32s, and that's about 1600, and I can take those away, and I just take what's left over, and I keep dividing it up. Eventually, 4 pages later, we get to a standard algorithm that looks a lot like this, but we model the thought process that gets you there. And what do we have next? Here's some more pattern looking for. One of my favorite things about this slide is that we try to make it fun for the adults. We also have Rob frustrated with the long division here. Ugh, do we have to? Alex suggests we do long division, and we're fine with that. None of us in the office, we are full of math nerds, and none of us want to do long division. And so we look for nice ways to approach problems differently. But we also get to sneak in some Easter eggs. If you look at the bottom number there, there are 5... These were originally phone numbers, and we have 8675309. Nah. There's a few others. If anyone can figure out the other 2 Easter egg phone numbers in there, I'll be very impressed. But there's a Ghostbusters one, and there's God's phone number from Bruce Almighty, I think, or something like that. We found some fun phone numbers. I could finish up fairly quickly. We also have a lot of fun with it. You guys probably recognize, about half of you in the room probably recognize this scene. Anytime I have a blank page, I just get to play. And here we had a sort of a segue between they're going to a math meet, and we reenacted a scene from The Princess Bride. So we really do our best to make sure that the parents, a lot of times at this age, these are third and fourth grade books, the parents, our homeschool audience is a big audience of ours, and the parents like to read the books along with the kids, and we can engage the parents as well. So it's done quite well, and I hope you guys have fun questions for me.
Thank you so much. Thank you. While we're on the subject of math, we'll go to Jeffrey, who wrote a story called Problem On. Explain yourself.
Explain myself. I'd be happy to. I say as they take me away in handcuffs. Hello. So yes, I wrote this story for it's a 10-page comic for the Reading with Pictures anthology book, which again you should pick up that sampler. It's a hot sampler. I just talking about like how I write educational comics, I like to think of it, and educational video games as well, I like to think of it as sort of building a dream house. So the math, the curriculum, that's the foundation, right? That's why we're here. You know, that's the purpose of this comic, right? Is to educate, is to teach the subject of math. And sort of when we think about what we like in houses, though, it's generally not like, oh, that foundation's really solid, you know, that cement is really well mixed. It's like how big is that bathroom, and does that bathroom have 1 jacuzzi or 3 jacuzzis? So for me, a dream house piece of educational comic would be one that parodies something that I enjoy, such as Pokemon. When we were pitching comics to the anthology, this was one of the ones that I was hoping would get picked, because I really enjoy parody. These books that I do, The Devastator, they're all parodies. So, for example, on this is, Oh, the Flesh You Will Eat, Dr. Seuss from the Perspective of a Flesh-Eating Virus. By the way, everybody here on this panel is super smart, but I was the one in the back of the class, so... Anyway, so, yes. Oh, wow, it jumps in here. No, Joe, you're great. Basically, on the monsters tip. So, this is the story of, I can't remember. Oh, is it Matt? I know his name
Matt
is
Adam.
Chris.
Adam.
Math Adam. I knew this was Math. Math Adam. And he is really terrible at the game Probamon. Like Pokemon, Probamon involves monsters fighting each other, but you have to know the probability. It's all a probability game, basically. And he doesn't want to learn the gameplay. He doesn't want to learn probability. He thinks of himself as a Probamon master because he's got Probamon underwear, Probamon video games, Probamon life insurance policy. But of course it is to his advantage to learn probability because that's what the game is based on. If you want to be a true Probamon master, you got to learn probability. And Tracy and I developed this game together, and it is going to be a real playable game. Backers to our Kickstarter will be able to get a set of Probamon cards, which is going to actually play this game.
In the lesson plan guide that accompanies the book that you can get online for free, there's a set of cards in there.
Cool, I didn't know that. That's awesome. See, I'm learning things in this panel, too. Isn't that cool? We're learning together. So basically the way the game works is you know that there's a certain number of water Probamon, a certain number of air Probamon, a certain number of fire, and a certain number of earth monsters that are going to come out. And you try to guess what the other person is going to play based on what they already, what they have. So it's more likely at the beginning of a game to see a water Probamon. But on the other hand, if it's towards the end of the game and there's only two left and only one of them, you haven't seen their Earth Probamon yet, there's a better chance that it's going to be Earth. Anyway, you can read the comic in Reading with Pictures. But the thing that I enjoy is sort of trying to marry the parody with education in a way that makes them feel like they're running in sync with each other, you know. That it doesn't feel like we just put a layer of, you know, a gloss over education, that it's really like, that to me this is, I hope you'll find too, that it is legitimately funny and at the same time that it is legitimately educational. So it works on two levels.
And that's what Sesame Street was predicated on. You know?
Yes, that's right. I definitely look to Sesame Street. And also, especially for this one, to a show called Square One. I don't know if you guys remember that show. Yes, a few folks of a certain age will remember that show. But this was definitely thinking of that in mind. I loved those. They did a lot of older kid math parodies and stuff. So
I particularly love that panel at the bottom where you see his brain.
He's becoming so much smarter with his gameplay.
And that's something about comics that you can do visually. You know, you can show throughout the game the probability of the way that he's planning it. You're showing the kids how to think that way. Thank you, Trevor.
Of course, my pleasure.
I think what we should do next is jump from math to science, because we all know math and science. Math and science in the tree. So maybe we'll go to Nick.
Sure. Okay, so this is Howtoons. This is the cover of the 10th anniversary book. So like I said, Howtoons is a project that, I don't know if you know who I am. I'm primarily a comic book artist. I worked for Marvel for 10 years, and now I'm at Image Comics doing a book called East to West, which is very adult in nature. I don't encourage you to give that to your students. but I've been doing this project before all of that, and I met my co-creators when I lived in Boston, and they were two grad students out of MIT. And one of them is Saul Griffith. He went on to win a MacArthur Grant, and he now lives in the Bay Area, and he runs a place called Other Lab, and it's a think tank, and they do a lot of problem solving, and he's primarily an engineer inventor. And the idea was to back in 2004, when we met in Boston, was to redo the how-to book in a new fashion. So this was, I don't know if you're familiar with Make magazine. We started with Make. We've been in that issue since number one. And the whole goal is to teach kids how to build things using everyday household goods. And it's really important to us that we use materials that are readily available to educators and parents, and not something that you have to go, you know, to Radio Shack and pull all these electronic parts out. You know, so a lot of the projects are recyclables, stuff you have lying around your house, and you might have to run to a hardware store to get some of the stuff. And also another, and I think this is a theme that's going to go across the panel, is it's very important to integrate, for us, integrating instructions into the storytelling. So as seamlessly as possible. So when the kids are reading their story, they don't even know they're learning. And hopefully the story is so entertaining that they're going to want to go build this project and basically learn through play. So that's our core goal. Another thing, too, is I don't want to come up here. We do teach. I think you can learn. You do learn things through HowToons. But I would never suppose that I can do what a teacher does, being a comic book artist. And I hope that what HowToons acts as is primer material for teachers that they can use to get kids interested in what they're trying to get across. And I think everyone up here will testify that kids are just drawn to comics. And like what Tracy was saying earlier, there's so much information a kid can get from a comic book. It can even transcend language if the craft is done well. You know, if we're good storytellers and we do our job, you don't even know how to read. You can start to pick up some of this stuff, and then you can learn to read. And then we're bringing all the STEM topics. We like to even say STEAM because we like to teach kids how to draw and encourage them to make their own HowToons. And with that comes critical thinking. So just the act of doing a comic, encouraging your children to make a comic book, will instill critical thinking, how to sequence things, how to establish things. You know, conveying information visually is a lot of thinking, even if you're just writing it. So I encourage, you know, people to even try and make their own comics as adults and then learn that process and then try and transform that to kids. So we can go to the next one. So this is an example of early work, and this is a soda bottle submarine. This is like what you would see in what we were doing in Make Magazine. So that's just two soda bottles. If you cut off the bottom of those water bottles that have the high and low points, you can cut out the high and low points and create a propeller. We can use a rubber band as a drivetrain. We anchor that rubber band with two paper clips. We've now taken out the chapstick top as a spacer. Instead, you use a bead from a bracelet. But with this, with these simple materials, we can teach kids about buoyancy and the simple engineering that goes behind submarines and things like that. That in a nutshell is what HowToons is. And then from there, you know, you can take it from there and hopefully inspire kids. And that's a picture of, like, my wife is a... So the team is very interesting. It's Saul Griffith, this MacArthur Grant-winning inventor. He's brilliant. He really is like our generation's Tony Stark. Like, he's doing soft robotics. He's doing... When he actually got me to come out west to live in California because he got a project funded by Google doing kites that extract the energy from high-altitude winds. Like, it's just really... He's so inspiring, and that trickles down into what we create in HowToons. My wife, Ingrid, was a toy designer, so she really crafts these projects to almost like they're pieces of art. And that's the soda bottle sub. This is another one my wife came up with. This is a Gami Bot. So you can buy in bulk the little vibration motors that go on phones, and they're super cheap. You can hook them up to a battery from a watch. And then using origami skills, you can create these little creatures, and we can create a simple robot. And the idea here is just to say to kids, like, robots are little programmable things that we can use to do tasks. And with this one, it's just like, you know, can you fold those legs in a certain way to get it to walk in a line? Can you fold them in a certain way to make it do a circle? Just really simple stuff, primer material, but getting kids, you know, I have two kids of my own, and the iPad is so addictive, and the phone, and we try and keep it away, and like, we really have to encourage kids to get off the couch and interact with the real world, and that's another prime goal of ours. So. Here's a picture of the Gami Bot. And so all this you're seeing now is in this book. I have a copy for someone, I guess whoever wants it can grab it. You get it. You raise your hand. It's available at the image booth. If you come to a signing and if you're an educator, I will give it to you. So just say I was at your panel. That'll be the code. Okay? Image won't want to kill me, but normally they're $17. I'll check on my phone in 1 second.
Do you know what number the image booth is?
Oh, it's so big. It's right next to the Marvel booth.
2729.
There you go. There's Jen. Jen's an image, yeah. Jen, can we give some books away to educators? Okay.
No.
Never.
Yeah, we could do it.
Well, maybe I should put a number on it.
Nick, what Melanie does is you should give them a specific password, and if they know the password, you can give them a book. So GammyBot would make a great
book. Right, okay. You
say
come
GammyBot
up with
name.
GammyBot at a sign.
There's a word for you, visual artists.
I have a soft spot for educators. So this is, and then the book kind of culminates. Each project gets more difficult, and these skills build upon one another. And this is a soda bottle rocket using, this is, you have to go to the hardware store. This is half-inch internal diameter PVC pipe. You cut it like so. You take a soda bottle. You can pressurize it with the air pump that you connect using a bicycle inner tube. You cut off that valve, put it into the PVC pipe, put air into that PVC, goes into the bottle. And you can launch, I think next slide has a picture. You can launch that soda bottle like 200 feet in the air. You can also, then it's fun to experiment like pressurizing water or just using air pressure, which can go higher and how much PSI. So getting into things like that. And again, I'm stressing, like, I'm a karmic artist. My ideal goal is to entertain. So I'm really trying to make this an entertaining comic.
Just out of curiosity, how many teachers do we have? How many of you can see this and go, okay, I see math lessons, I see science lessons, I see graphs, I see data. This is a good starting point. As he said, he's a comic artist, but it gives you a great starting point to get the kids engaged and do an activity that you can build on from there.
Yeah, and we really encourage, like, this story, I love this story a lot. It was done a long time ago, so my drawing skills are kind of atrocious, but it encourages failure, and the kids learn to work together to build this rocket launcher. And, you know, that's kind of, like, that's the way the story is based, and they're all different lengths, and this one's, I think, close to 20 pages. And then also we like to encourage kids to use tools. I put this page in because when our book originally came out in 2007 through HarperCollins, we weren't shelved in the kids section because of this page. They deemed our book too dangerous. So instead, we were shelved in adult science. And accordingly, it didn't really sell very well. But I think it's important to encourage kids to use tools. And we're going, you know, I think our education has gotten very 2D. Like, you know, it's all on the chalkboard or it's all on monitors now. And we're not really doing a 3D kind of, like, getting your hands dirty, building things, making things. And I think these are important life skills. Okay, and then lastly is reignition. So what we just looked at was all 10 years all on this book, and Fred can probably finish this up. I then, we wanted, Image was so happy with Howtoons, they said, let's do a new monthly, so we're going to do Howtoons Reignition. This book is all going to deal with energy literacy, and all the projects in it revolve around renewable energy, all the projects. And this is the first time we've done this huge, massive story. Because Saul and I are not writers. Like, you read our little six-page and go, oh, that's cute. But Fred here, I mean, he's writing a really competitive tale, he's writing a really beautiful tale. And then we have an artist, Tom Fowler, who, I mean, Tom's as talented as they get in comics. And so now we have Fred Valente, Tom Fowler, drawing and writing Howtoons. It's like two of comics' top creators doing a book. Five-issue miniseries starts in August. And it's absolutely gorgeous, and I'm so proud of it. So, Fred, if you want to say something, go for it.
That introduction, wow. Thank you. So here we sort of, we open the book with basic energy concepts. And then we move along to a storyline where the two heroes of Silly and Tough, you saw earlier, get put in suspended animation to ride out the energy crisis. And when they wake up, they find that Earth has been completely changed. And they've got to use their Howtoons to survive. So it's basically a 100-page-plus graphic novel with a, you know, first, second, and third act. And where the Howtoons, like here, is this great project improv flashlight that Ingrid came up with, and Ingrid wrote the copy of the instructions for this, and then she provides Tom with photographs, and then he actually lays out and draws the page based on her
photographs that she's done. Well, she's constructed the house.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is this book was based on a story that Saul went to a conference in D.C. on geoengineering, and someone brought up the idea, like, oh, you know, if global warming gets too bad, we could set off volcanoes, we could nuke them, and that would put ash up in the air that would reflect sunlight, you know, and then they're like debating this, and it could cause a new ice age, and it's just like, it's kind of these, it's the merging of science, and that would hopefully never happen. But it's a cool little basis of this sci-fi yarn, like Fred came up
sure,
with.
Sure, launching giant satellites with giant mirrors on them to right. reflect sunlight. So basically doing everything we possibly can except, you know, reduce carbon emissions.
Well, we love our guests.
Yeah, we do. We love our cars. Yeah, so that is out the first Wednesday in August, correct?
August yes. 5th.
August 5th.
Excellent, thank you. And I'm going to stick with you, Fred, because you sort of have feet in both camps.
I do.
Not only does this for science, but he also writes comics about history.
I do. Yeah.
Do I have that on your page?
Many. Yes, you should have my thing. So, my longtime partner in crime and I, Ryan, the great cartoonist Ryan and Levy, and I started out doing this book, Action Philosophers, which takes philosophy and provides. Tells the lies. Sorry, I woke up at 4 a.m. New York City time, so I'm not quite in full capacity here. So we started out doing Action Philosophers, which takes the lives and thoughts of history's A-list brain trust and tells them in a hip and humorous comic fashion. And Dark Horse is doing its own 10th anniversary of Action Philosophers. How Tunes Action Philosophers are turning 10. And so I've got postcards for that if you're interested. There's little paper dolls in the back, Play-Doh and Nietzsche and stuff. And so we decided to do presidents. And so Ryan whipped up. So we did this online. But we did it originally for Josh's Reading with Pictures textbook. And so we did it as a comic, physical comic. And there's the cover, which Ryan probably came up with on his own. And so part of what we do to teach, part of we like to sort of be punk rock educators. We're demolishing myths as much as we are teaching facts. So we start out by talking about that most nations have. Creation myths. The Aztecs believe they saw they were wandering in the desert and they saw this vision of this eagle eating a snake, and that's where they found in Mexico City. And then the Romans, you know, have their story about the twins being found by a woodpecker and a, I forget what it is, a wolf.
She-wolf. Yeah.
She-wolf, yes. Suckling, but we left out the suckling part of the she-wolf story. And so Americans have the story that, you know, hardy frontier had been blew away, decadent Europeans, and we created this perfect constitution, and the end, you know, and that's American history for you. But then we talk about how actually the true story is much more interesting, and so we jump into George Washington. We do something in Action Presidents. Pardon me, I talk very fast. We do something in Action Presidents that we started doing in Action Philosophers, which is we take biographical details and we sort of spiral out from there these abstract concepts. We try to root all the abstract concepts of philosophy and history into something human that people can latch onto. You know, for example, you know, George Washington started out from a very early age in extreme wealth, but also in a situation where the planter class in Northern Virginia, what's called the Northern Neck of Virginia, all married each other, and they were all very kind of in this very specific culture. And I can't remember, did I give you the next page? I did, okay, cool. And so, part for the Kickstarter for Reading with Pictures is we drew somebody, we would draw people into the story, so that guy in the yellow shirt at the top is a Kickstarter backer who got drawn into the story. Yeah. So we were sort of talking about how, you know, to guys like George Washington who were raised in this very kind of austere way, their idea of freedom wasn't simply, I get to do whatever I want. Their idea of freedom was the freedom from yourself, was the idea of self-control. And so we're sort of talking about this because there's an old George Carlin line, the great comedian said, you know, America was founded by slaveholders yearning to be free. And so we sort of are sort of talking about this in the context of how slaveholders like George Washington would have this very kind of different view of liberty, which is not, of course, to excuse the horrors of slavery, but to help kids and everyone sort of understand him and where he's coming from, while not to condone some of that stuff.
Yep.
And that's it. Yeah. Yeah. And then that story's about 20 pages long, and it goes into his military tactics and the Whiskey Rebellion, because kids love the Whiskey Rebellion.
Yeah, they do.
And various things from spreads. And why we decided to have the office of the president in the first place, of course, because, you know, we
originally had the Articles of Confederation that did not have a president, it was just Congress, and it was a total mess, and they gave up on it in 2 years, 3 years.
Okay, thank you very much. So keeping with history, go to Jonathan.
I'm waiting for action presidents James Buchanan.
All right, we're definitely offering right now.
Well, my two previous books on the Civil War, the Gettysburg Address book, and the Constitution are things that you can use in classrooms, and they have been extensively used in classrooms. After writing two books about, you know, the dispiriting saga of race relations in the United States and on war and politics, I wanted to take a break with a lighter subject. But even though this might not be something that you could want to use in your classroom, what I want to do is use a sequence in it to sort of proselytize about what comics can do so well. And obviously, you know, this comes up a lot, like almost instantly every time you're talking about using comics in the classroom, is, you know, if people think, what's wrong with the written word? You know, we have this great tradition of letters on the one hand and visual arts on the other. And they're both great, you know, great deal of respect by the Academy, but for some reason you put them together and everybody thinks it's for kids. I don't necessarily know why that is. So we're not here to, you know, we wouldn't replace every book with a graphic novel. We're not here to talk smack about the power of the written word alone. I just finished a, you know, early 20th century Edith Wharton novel last night, and I was devastated by it. And, like, one sentence in every 10 just poleaxed me with how articulate it can be. So the best of the best writers should keep doing their thing. But my mission and why I like to work in comics is to sort of do two things. If you go to the next visual there, on the top you can see, you know, this typical page from a scholarly article. And this is an article, a scholarly article, a symposium from the American Anthropological Association. That's one of the many things like that I used for research. And, you know, these things are hard to find, they're kind of obscure, they're hard to read, they're not meant for anything but an academic audience. But these articles can still have a lot of brilliant things to say. And one of the things that frustrates me, and I'm sure frustrates a lot of you as teachers, is that some of the best research and the most updated ideas that are out there take like years, if not decades, to like percolate into the mainstream. I mean, there are things about the Civil War that you know, that haven't even entered into common knowledge that scholars have been talking about for years. So one of the things that I try to do is bring the best research, the most updated ideas, to an adult audience in the most efficient, you know, the 3E's way that I can. And so that's one thing that I can do, and you can sort of see, like, yeah, which one of those two things is easier to digest, is easier to take a look at. And then on the other, the other thing that I try to think about is, like, the comics medium gives you this, you know, amazing set of storytelling tools. You know, it can do things, the comics medium can do things the written word cannot, that a movie cannot, that a lecture cannot. And it does a lot of things. I mean, you can have a textbook, for example, and you can deck out the textbook with, you know, great graphic design and colors and illustrations and photos and timelines. But there's still things that a textbook can't do or won't do or can't do well. So it's our job to try to use this medium to do the most intelligent and compelling work we can with things that a textbook just can't or won't do. There's a colleague of ours who had a great line about this, that comics are great for clarifying things, but not simplifying. There's a big difference there, I would say. So what I try to do, for example, is use these tools of storytelling, comic book storytelling, to develop a point or craft an argument. And to show you, even though this isn't a book you necessarily use in a classroom, I'd like to show you like some of the ways that we do it. I want to talk about agriculture first. Has anybody in the room ever heard of the beer theory of agriculture?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a very serious debate out there that in academia that human beings may have learned to cultivate edible plants, not to grow food to eat, but to grow raw ingredients for beer, that it was more important for them to have beer. Now, this might make it seem like we're evolved from frat boys instead of from apes, but whichever of those two lower life forms you're talking about, this is still something that people like actually debate. So my book is trying to use comics to like look at the points of this debate. And here on the first page, so, you know, this is something that we can do, is take you to another land in another time. This is 9,000 years ago in modern-day Turkey, a very well-preserved Neolithic site called Çatalhöyük. It's like the most well-preserved Neolithic site that's ever been found. So if you look at the image, you know, imagine how much text it would be required to sort of establish what you see there. I mean, it wouldn't be like an entire book, but imagine describing that in a couple of paragraphs. The human eye processes images at something like 60,000 times faster than it processes text. So this isn't saying that text has no place, but it's saying that images are very powerful, and if we use them, they can be powerful teaching tools. So not only here are we sort of, you know, taking you to another time and place, but we're also doing this thing where we're using the rooftops of this like Pueblo-like settlement as caption panels, and there's an interesting interplay between the text and the picture. And you know, even in there's obviously no period artwork of Chattel Hugh, so we have artists, you know, well-informed and capable artists can bring us there. But what we can do is, like, I like to, a point that I try to make is that, you know, the present is a part of history, and history is part of the present. They're all interconnected. And by this book takes us through 9,000 years of history. It takes us from about 10,000 BC to the present. But it does it with a sort of continuity of style and with color. So it sort of subtextually and subconsciously makes the point that all of human experience is sort of connected and sort of the same. If you go to the next page there, another thing we do, so one of the great things that I love about working in comics is that you can create visual metaphors for things that are really abstract. Just in that first panel there, you have Stone Age people chewing up like at a stadium snack bar, one in line for beer, one in line for food, wondering which one did they really want. And then, so comics can, we can turn these abstract ideas into vignettes, we can turn them into characters, we can use humor, as so many of my fellow panelists have done so well. If you go to the next one. And then another thing we can do is change up the style through every once in a while. That just keeps the reading experience like plastic and fresh. Almost like if you were listening to a piece of music and the tempo changed or the key changed or something like that, you would think, oh, something's different now. I'm going to start paying attention again. So we can create these subtle shifts. We can use humor. We can use different color patterns and different color schemes to get different ideas across. You can go to the next one. And an action sequence, too. What's going on in this action sequence is very different from what's going on in the words, but there can be a tension between the words and the action can open up a new space for a whole new type of meaning, just right in there. And then if you want to look at the last page. So you can see that this medium just creates a more fulfilling and satisfying and dynamic reading experience, and what that does is it makes it, the readers have a greater response, they remember it more, and they have a more profound response to it. I was listening to two AP English teachers using comics recently, and they were talking about how once they started to introduce comics, even with their lower-level kids, they were getting so much more back in terms of the volume of the papers. The kids just felt moved to write and think so much more about them.
Thank you so much. Hey, Josh, how are you at speaking?
Very, very fast.
Okay. You go ahead and start talking while I find the right thing.
Okay, so I want to talk real quick about the mail order ninja story that I did. Oh, no,
okay.
Look at this.
Okay,
it's
okay.
All right,
there.
Okay.
There it is.
Okay, so mail order ninja is a series I created with Eric Owen from Beast Academy. Continuity, people. It was a comic strip and a graphic novel series, and it was a lot of fun. And we decided to reuse the characters here for a science story that explains why giant gorillas can't exist. And you see they're fighting Kublai Khan in that previous panel. He is a Mongorilla, the Silverback Horde. Jiro and Bubbles Lee, the Kung Fu Chimp, have to take him on. And then later on, so this is the past, this is the 90s, that's why Bubbles Lee is rocking the fade. And then we go forward to the present day, and we have our characters, including our sort of science nerd, Herman W. Poindexter. We're not big on subtlety in Mail Order Ninja. And, you know, he's explaining why learning is awesome. You never know why you're going to need it. And these Mongorillas show up. And, you know, the ninja's able to do awesome ninja stuff, because that's what ninjas do. But then eventually, Genghis Khan shows up. And, well, how are you going to defeat him? He's a Mongol and a gorilla. That's, you know, that's pretty hardcore. And unfortunately, he does lose. They fight. He loses. Bubbles Lee shows up too. But yeah, so there's stuff that happens. And then as we go towards the end, he wins, but then he explains, Herman doesn't buy it. He's like, no, this can't be. And let me tell you why. There's this thing that Galileo, this idea he had called the squared cube theory, and it explains why when objects get bigger, they get heavier faster than they get larger. And volume determines muscle, surface area determines musculature, whereas volume determines weight. And so they get heavier faster and they get stronger. And that's why he can't stand up. And he falls over and is defeated. It was brains that fell the beast. And, you know, it's this fun adventure story that's cute and has a lot of in-jokes about things like dodgeblade. That's a thing that ninjas play on the playground. But the idea here is there's this core... we have some other ones. Pretty fun. But there's this core science concept that is the climax of the whole story. It is what the story is about, and they would have lost without it, so you have these cool, awesome action heroes who only succeed because of science and because of learning and knowledge, and then you build lesson plans out from that, talking about where does the square cube ball come from. There are some of the lesson plans. Tracy, did you write those?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tracy wrote them. They're great. That's what we tried to do in comics that make kids smarter. We got people like Jeffrey, like Fred, Katie Cook, like Chris Giarrusso, who are successful comic creators. The kids spend their own money to get these books. And then we said, okay, we're going to give you a list of topics drawn from the Common Core curriculum standards or the McReel standards, all the stuff that you as educators basically have to teach to in some way or another. And we said, does one of those ideas move you? Okay, let's make a great story from that. We would partner them with a curriculum developer like Tracy or Dr. Katie Monin, folks like that, and work together to make this great comic at the end that, as Jeffrey said, has this foundation that does what you need it to do. It teaches what you need to teach. It gives you the tools you need to teach with it. With our teacher guide, which is actually almost as long as the book itself. The book's like 180 pages. Teacher's guide's 160. And then we said, this is a fun story that kids would read anyway. It will teach them the thing that you need them to know. And it solves that problem that educators face in the classroom, which is, okay, you're someone, you're here at Comic-Con, obviously you're already kind of in the tank for this, but how do you justify it to parents, to administrators, to your colleagues? And then once you've justified it, well then how do you use it? What's the toolkit? This was not, unless you had a pretty hip, cool curriculum in your university experience, you were not taught how to teach with these materials. And so the goal of comics that make kids smarter is to not only be comics that are good, that kids are going to want to use or engage with on their own terms, but then also to be a toolkit to help you justify and use the materials. So that's kind of what we do with that book.
Excellent. And there's a little bonus page that's one of the story by Robin Langridge about physics. I think it's Laws of Physics. That's me.
Beast Academy was tied to the standards. We started 4 years ago, and it was right as they were coming out, and we said, you know, we better do this. And so we look at all the standards, and we make sure all the third grade standards are hit in the third grade series, and the fourth grade standards should be hit by the time we finish the fourth grade series.
Yeah, and all the lessons in the Reading the Pictures book do have Common Core standards listed for every lesson. If you're here tomorrow, getting the most out of graphic novels in your classroom and library, I'm actually going to do a little presentation on why comics are complex texts within the comic book. Stay tuned.
Turn back.
If I was perhaps too slow to take notes on every single thing, is there a difference?
Yes, I'm going to show you that one.
Okay.
So, I have a list. I have started.
of this, a lot of this stuff is also in
the book.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff out there. These were specifically created for the classroom with lesson plans. These are books that were created independently, most of them, but work beautifully within the classroom. Mr. Social Studies, that list could go on forever. Don't worry, you don't need to take a picture of it because...
And there's postcards.
If you go to readingwithpictures.org, when I get home on Sunday night or Monday morning, I will put up a blog post with links to our list of all our contents here and a bunch of other lists. I will put links into the blog post that will say STCC panel post. Go in there and you can just get everything. It's readingwithpictures.org.
And in case you forget, there's bookmarks and it's all in that sampler. For God's sake, take those samplers. I don't want to carry them back. I don't know how heavy they are.
Many are taping too, so we'll get that. We're going to link to that as well, so you guys can jump in.
Fred, would you mind picking those up by this? Thanks, brother.
I
think they're talking
about
it. I will have it in 1 second.
Okay.
Other questions? Yeah. You got a little more time.
In the corner, I think. We don't at this point. That's one of the things that I talk about tomorrow. Some of the leveling issues with comics and graphic novels are difficult because they don't have as many words and they'll come out much lower than they actually are because the vocabulary is crazy. The level is higher.
We actually want, I mean, one of my goals has been to approach Lexile and AR to try to get them to create a graphic novel-centric, a different leveling system entirely for graphic novels, because the one that exists now, it isn't designed for it. It doesn't work. I mean, when I was in middle school, I was reading at the college level because of comics. Like, I was a college student as a seventh grader because I took the SAT and I scored high enough to, like, get in. And it was because comics made reading easy and it made reading fun. And once reading is easy and reading is fun, then learning anything becomes easy and fun.
Yeah, I'll be at booth 701 right after this, and I already got a text from my publisher that said I can have 2 boxes, so that's going to be 20 books.
Whoa.
So the first 20 who come to booth 701, you're going to have to give me like 20 minutes. I got to run to the image booth and carry them back. I'll be there.
And what's the password?
But I'm going to have 20, and I have your copy right here. You were the first to raise your hand.
I also have books that I'm happy to get rid of and don't want to carry back on the trolley.
Yeah, and also,
come up and get books is the
and
point.
And
buy my books.
Do you guys have, like,
assessment
scores and things?
There are assessment scores.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are small assessment pieces within every lesson plan within our book. They're not full-on tests, but they are suggestions for assessment. That's one of the things that if we go forward and do more of these, that will be a bigger piece.
Blown minds of children.
Okay, now, wait.
I just want to make an announcement. There's a booth that I just happened into at 2207, and it's physicists that are giving out these experiments for kids. It's great. Check it out. It's great. 2207.